time to thrive. Welcome to the Thriveology Podcast with Dr. Lee Bockham. Join us as we explore ways that you can thrive in your life, regardless of what life throws at you. It's your life. Time to live it.
Hey, Thrivers, thank you for being here. This is the Thriveology Podcast, and I am Lee Bockham. And as I often say, I am a full-time Thriveologist, but only a part-time Thriver. And what that means is that while I spend my career studying how people thrive and better ways of thriving in your life, that doesn't mean I'm 100% able to do that in my own life. I have my own times when I find that I have to learn how to do a little more thriving. And today I wanted to talk about three different paradigms that I've gone through myself and that I think a lot of other people can relate to about how we understand what happens to us when life kicks us, when we have a difficult time. And this whole idea is basically kind of the spectrum of what happened to me being trained as a therapist and arriving at this place of realizing that therapy has very limited capacities for getting us to a thriving point in life. And let me just say, I'm not kicking at therapy. I was trained as a therapist. I understand that world very well. I just know that there are limits. In fact, I remember there was a point in my own life when, as part of my training, I had to go through my own therapy. And I remember there was a point one day when I turned to the therapist and I said, you know what? I am done with this type of getting better, with this type of self-improvement. I'm done with that. And he said, so you think you've grown as much as you can? To which I responded, I think I've grown as much as I can in therapy. There are lots of other ways of growing in life that I intend on doing. It's just not right now going to be around therapy. And part of what I was saying was I'm understanding things differently. So part of what happened in my own life was after I had done lots of years, and my poor and very patient wife had come with me to graduate school. She was doing her own graduate school training in social work, and I was doing my graduate training in pastoral counseling. And so as I was getting through that process, I remember I was writing my dissertation, and it's as clear as if it happened yesterday. I was writing my dissertation on what was wrong with the pastoral counseling model. And basically behind that was what was wrong with the therapy model. Now, that had been a part of my whole trajectory of graduate school, where one day I realized that maybe not everything that was not going right in therapy, for which I was in supervision, you know, where I was offering therapy and a supervisor was helping me be a better therapist. And I kept feeling like something was wrong with me, that I wasn't getting the results that I should have. And one day I turned to the therapist and who was supervising me and I said, you know, I'm not sure it's really me that is the problem here. I think it's the model. Well, that kicked off a whole new direction of me trying to figure out what was up with therapy and why I had some difficulties just choking down the ideas of therapy. More than that, why wasn't it just fixing everybody? Why was there still so much depression? And what I realized was I would see people for depression week after week after week, and we would learn to cope with life. And I saw people with anxiety, and they would learn to cope with life. But it was never a place of finding a new way of being. And while some people say that that's what happens in therapy, and I'm not going to take that away from some people, I think it's outside of the therapy model that that happens. I think there are some severe limits of the therapy model, and that's part of my trajectory. So there I was, spending a lot of time shooting at the therapy model as proposed as psychotherapy, and really talking about what's wrong with this, what are the shortcomings of this. And so as I had done that throughout my one master's degree and my PhD, I actually have two masters, but one of them was a basic kind of the master's of divinity. And so this was the next two levels up where I really was in graduate school. And so in that graduate school program, I kept kicking at the therapy model. And so I remember that one day when I'm writing my dissertation, because I realized, you know, if I had been kicking at therapy for so long, I finally had to say what I did believe. I finally had to say, this is what I thought. And so I originally set out to create what I consider to be my model of therapy. And I that was my intention of writing what I consider to be a better model of therapy, proposing a better way of doing therapy. And one day I was reading a magazine. It was New Age magazine, a magazine that doesn't even exist anymore. But at that point, it was kind of a cutting edge thought magazine that had a lot to do with spirituality, with therapy, self-help, self-development, and came out of the New Age movement. But it had gotten away from that. It had gotten away from that and moved towards a more psychotherapeutic model in some ways, and a more cutting edge model in other ways. And so I was reading an article, and it was on life coaching. Now, life coaching is a very well understood and very well populated profession these days, but it wasn't then. This was back in the mid-90s. And so at that point, the idea of being a professional coach was completely foreign. It was still a wild idea. And I was reading this article about some of the early pioneers of life coaching. And in that article, they began to talk about the differences between coaching and other models of help. And I turned to my wife and I said, "This is how I do therapy. This is how I've been doing therapy. I just didn't know what to call it." And so she read the article and she agreed with me that that much more represented my approach. And she said, "So what are you going to do now? Now you've already done all this training as a therapist and you're telling me that you feel more like a coach. What are you going to do now?" And I said, "I don't know." And so what I did do was I completed my dissertation, got my degree, and began training in life coaching, as not as a way of saying I'm going to be a life coach, but of finding better ways of helping people transform their lives, not just kind of repair some things that have hurt them. And that began this notion for me that there really are three different metaphors or three different paradigms or three different models of understanding the human psyche and what happens when life kicks us. Because guess what? Life kicks all of us. We all have pains. We all have difficulties. And so the question is, what do? When we get hit, when we get knocked down, how do we take that back? What do we move to? Where are we headed to when that happens? So I remember a quote by Sigmund Freud, and I think it tells us a lot about the model of therapy. Now, it might have just been that Sigmund Freud had a bad day and was frustrated, and in his frustration said that the goal of psychotherapy was to move people from neurosis to just common, ordinary, everyday unhappiness. That was the scope he felt that people could move from being neurotic, which is a phrase that we don't even use a lot anymore, but having those kind of different psychological hang-ups that kept people from doing well. And instead of that, the therapy would move them to a place of just being unhappy. And I thought, wow, that's what I'm trying. That's my training. You know, my biggest hope in life is to help someone just get to unhappiness. And that model is built on the fact that when something happens to us, when something hurts us, that we are damaged goods. And that's a very interesting paradigm in psychology, because what it basically did is it took the idea that when you find somebody who is hurt, who is psychically hurt, who has psychological issues, and you look back and you say, wow, this is what happened to them. These are the incidences that led to this psychological issue. And that can be very true. That's a way of understanding, a diagnostic understanding of what happened. The problem is we went from diagnostic to proscriptive, that this was suddenly we went from the idea that if you're something is wrong with you, you look back and you find these things, to the idea that these things happen to you and something's going to be wrong with you. We go in the reverse way. So instead of saying, okay, you know, you're having this depression and your anxiety and all these other issues in your life because these things happened in your childhood, what we would say is these things would happen in your childhood. Therefore, you're going to have these issues later in life. And that began to be the model that we lived with. That began to be the model that infected our culture, that something happens to you and something's wrong with you. And that began to be a therapist model. And what I also noticed was that therapists began to talk about people as if they were only the diagnosis. So I would be sitting in case studies and case conferences where people would talk about this person and their diagnosis. And, you know, they would say, oh, my depressed patient, oh, my anxious patient, oh, my dependent personality patient, oh, my borderline personality patient. Not that those were issues, but those were the defining moments. And I realized that we had gone from being able to recognize that a different trauma in childhood may have led to some issues later in life. But now we're taking that and placing that as the diagnostic criteria for who that person has become without seeing the possibility of transformation. So the first paradigm that I really got clear about was the idea that we're damaged. That sure, we could find a little healing from our pains, but we are still somehow damaged, that we're only going to be able to get back to a common, ordinary unhappiness. And then I ran into some studies about resilience. And resilience is where it began to open my eyes to other possibilities. Because in resilience, it's when horrible, terrible things happen to people, and yet they continue on having a normal life. They continue having a life that is all about normal activities without all the psychological hang-ups. And a lot of that literature came out of studies, and the first ones happened in the 50s when it was looking at Hawaii. Now, Hawaii was an interesting place for social researchers to look at because it was isolated. You know, there wasn't a whole lot of in and out at that point. In the 50s, there weren't a lot of travelers going to Hawaii, and no one in Hawaii was leaving, and so it was a captive audience. But more than that, there were major issues there. There was a lot of alcoholism, a lot of drug use, a lot of early pregnancies, a lot of single-parent households. And so it began to be a really good place, if you want to use that term good, to study what happens to people when they are exposed to that. And so researchers went over and they were looking at what would happen to people when they're exposed to those situations. And sure enough, they had difficulties. They found lots of people who had difficulties when they were faced with drug abuse, when they were faced with alcoholism, domestic violence, early pregnancies, and single-parent households. That's no surprise to anyone. It's kind of one of those where you kind of say, why did the government even pay for that? Because we knew that. We already knew the problems that that caused. But then some researchers began to notice that there was a group of people who were unaffected by those situations. They would come from the same families. You know, they came from a family where there was alcoholism, drug abuse, early pregnancy, domestic violence, single-parent household, and yet they developed into normal, outstanding citizens. And the question began to be raised, why did some come that way and others go the other way? Why were some damaged, predictably, and others undamaged, unpredictably? Why did that happen? And that began to create the field of resilience. And so resilience is that other paradigm that we can learn to get back to normal, that it is possible to walk away from some very damaging, potentially damaging situations and be normal and not have any more damage than if those things had not happened to us. And we began to look at how those people coped better, how they found mentors to show them a different way, how they had been able to find their own internal resources and found ways of moving beyond that trauma just to find a normal way of being. So resilience began to be a research area that was very popular. And if you remember back in the 90s, that was a big piece. You know, there's a lot about the resilient personality. And as we began to understand this resilient personality, we began to understand that there are some mechanisms that we could put into place that would help people kind of be cushioned away from the difficulties. Now, a difficulty might come and they might have a kind of a dip, which is why we have that term resilience. It wasn't that they were completely unaffected. It would knock them down a little bit, but then they would dig back up. And so a lot of research came out about the resilient personality, and it is great research, research that I appreciate, and yet it's a bit incomplete. Because the resilience idea was that you could get back to a normal level of life in spite of the difficulties of life. But now there is a very small paradigm that's growing that has another idea, and I call this the thriving paradigm. That when life happens to us, when life kicks us, when we have traumas, when we have difficulties, It doesn't have to necessarily damage us, nor does it mean that we can only kind of get back to normal. It's possible that by those struggles, we go beyond it. We build beyond that. We learn to thrive because we take on the challenges of life, that we understand that those challenges are the ways that we grow. And so the thriving model is a growth model. You can understand it in different ways. A recent book about the obstacle is the way tells us that when we take on the struggles, we often find that our very struggles is what propels us to new ways of being. Or you may have heard of the book Anti-Fragile, where there are different systems, and some systems are fragile and they break down easily. And then there are others that are sturdy that just by their very nature, it's kind of like a rock. You throw a rock down, it's just by the very nature of that rock, nothing's going to happen to it. But then there are those anti-fragile systems where because of the challenges that come, it hardens it up. It's kind of like our body when we do exercise. When we do impact exercise, our bones naturally get dense. They are stronger than they were before that impact different exercise. So if you go out and you jump rope, instead of your muscle, your bones getting brittle because they kept getting pounded, they actually strengthen themselves. They reinforce themselves and become stronger. That's anti-fragile, but it's also my idea of thriving. You thrive when you take on the challenges of life and you say, this is the challenge that propels me to a new point. And the reason that I stumbled on that is because I had my own challenge. And I've talked about this before, but when I was diagnosed with what looked like at that point a life-threatening illness, I realized that I had let myself go in many ways, that I was fragile in many ways, that I had not been taking care of my body, so my body didn't have enough resources to deal with it, that I had been eating foods that were not healthy for me, and I'd put on extra weight that I was having to lug around, that I had not been exercising, that I was out of shape. Not only that, but here I am, a therapist, realizing that I had also allowed my psyche to get a little weak, that I was stressed out by things, that I let the thoughts in my mind become my realities. And I don't mean that in a metaphysical sense. I'm talking about in my interpretation, that I forgot I was just having thoughts, that I began to believe what my thoughts were telling me. So I would catastrophize things. And when things were getting tough, I would run from them in fear and try to avoid it. I wanted to have a very calm life. And I remember at the end of that illness that I realized that the goal of life was not to have a calm, stress-free life. It was to deal with the stresses freely and to find ways of being strengthened by the stresses, not being caught up and succumb to the stresses, but to recognize that stress is a normal part of life. How I deal with stress is the question. And so I began to understand that stress is always an internal reaction to an external reality, that somebody else may respond to the same situation in a different way. For instance, let's say that you have a friend who wants to go skydiving, and I say this because my son is approaching his 18th birthday, and that's his desire to do on his 18th birthday. And so he's excited about that idea, and I'll be going with him to do that. And I'm excited about that idea of skydiving and looking at what that's going to be like, the challenge of that, and of overcoming the fears of that, and that is a growth opportunity. Somebody else would look at that and say, that is the most terrifying thing in all the world, and I never want to do it. Or you might look at someone who looks at climbing Mount Everest and says, wow, this is a way for me to grow. And another person would look at that and go, wow, that person is crazy to do that. We all have different ways of approaching challenges in life. And they are the same external situations. But how we read that internally is the difference. So I began to understand that the stresses in my life were only issues in my life to which I was responding stressfully. No matter what they were, there was a place that I could step back and say, this is my response to that situation, or more accurately, this is my response to my thoughts about that situation, that somebody else may see it completely different. I noticed that past few years, I've talked to some soldiers, and several of the soldiers told me how exciting it was to have been sent overseas on a mission. Now, all of them told me that what they had seen was entirely horrific and horrible, and they wished that they had never seen it. But there was a group that said how exciting it was, and then there was a group that said how terrifying it was. Same external situation, different internal reality that creates a different way of responding to it. All of that's about thriving. How we take on the challenges. Do we take them on and say, wow, I want to escape this. I want to stay away from it. I want to keep it at a periphery. Or do we take them on and say, I can rise above this. I can learn from this. I can use a challenge and allow it to strengthen me rather than crush me. So then I understood there was this other place of transformation. That the first model is just how you might get to kind of a low-level feeling of hurt when something happens. Instead of a deep, deep wounding, you kind of get to this place where you go, wow, you know, I guess it's my mom's fault. You know, and we blame it on whatever event in the background we learned in therapy was the reason we're the way we are. And we always use that as the hanging point. And you often hear people talk about, well, you know, that's my anxiety talking, and that's because of my childhood, or that's because of my parents, or that's because of whatever happened. And I do not want to take away from the fact that there are painful events of life. There is no getting away from that. The question is how we frame that in our lives. Do we see that as an eternal injury for which we are broken? Or do we see it as a place where we can move beyond that to the second model, resilience, where we say, well, I can get back to normal. I can get back to the place where I'm, you know, finding a normal place of standing. Or do we see that there is a whole other level where we say, what do I need to learn from that and what do I need to leave behind from that? How can I leave behind the injury of that and take forward with me the lessons learned? And there are always lessons to be learned from the struggles. There are always ways we can learn to be more alive, to be more thankful, appreciative, to be responding to people in more empathetic ways because of those difficulties that come our way, or we can become more resentful, we can hold on to grudges longer, we can choose to never forgive, we can choose to always be limping along on some level. Now, let me be clear. I don't think that I've gotten to the place where throughout all of my life, I thrive because of all the difficulties of my life. My challenge is to try to thrive more. Not that we will ever all go, you know, wow, that hurt a little bit, but now I'm going to thrive from it. There are always going to be times when something holds us back. And the challenge of life is to say there is always a new place of growth. That no matter where I move to, there's going to be another difficulty. There's going to be another challenge. Many times in the past couple of years, I've had chances of interviewing people who have become very successful in business. And one of the things that I often notice is they all have a place where they can point to as an unsuccessful point, a failure, a pain. And what they all said to me is, I wasn't ready yet. I hadn't learned the lessons yet to be successful. It wasn't, well, you know, I had these hard things happen, and so, you know, I figured I better quit, but wow, something did happen better, and I just kind of stumbled into this. None of them said this. Now, I also met some people who had been unsuccessful in entrepreneurial endeavors and had backed away, had realized that, you know, this didn't work, and therefore they must be a failure. There's something just wrong with them, so they better get out of it. That's using the model of the hurt. Then there are those who go, okay, well, you know, I must not be that, so I'm just going to go back to my job. And it's kind of that thriving idea where they just kind of return, or I'm sorry, the resilient idea where they just kind of return to ground zero. They get to that ground zero point. But the thriving entrepreneurial people are the ones who said, I learned my lessons because of the things that upended me. And I learned my lessons well enough so that now I'm ready to be one step ahead, one step above, one layer, one level ahead, one layer, one level above where I was. Now I'm capable of succeeding. Now I'm ready to really push it forward. Now that same model that I discovered in entrepreneurs is also true with people who have had horrible things happen in their life. The entrepreneur has no difference in mindset than someone who is overcoming life difficulties and learning from life difficulties. And so what happens is that we begin to see those three distinct models. And my question to you is, which one captivates you? Which one holds you? Is it the idea that those things in your past happened and now you're damaged goods? You might get a little bit better. You might be able to learn to cope. You might be able to get some strategies for feeling a little bit better. But in the end, you're still kind of limping along. Or do you pull from the resilient idea that what you hope for is just to kind of get back to normal, that you find some skills, some capacities that get you back to normal? Or do you say, you know what, it's time for me to learn from my struggles and step up a whole nother level? That's the question. Are you at a deficit point, or are you break-even point, or are you at a plus point? The deficit point is the damaged idea that comes to us from therapy, and we've had lots of years to develop that and lots of different books that will tell you why you are the way you are with no way of seeing differently. Now we have this other idea of break-even, where things can happen to us, but we can kind of dig back up to normal. But the new idea that's not so new, but the new idea that's bubbling up from our society is, how can we step up? How can we get to a plus level just because we decide we can learn from the knocks that come along, that we toughen up based on those knocks? Those are the three paradigms, and my challenge to you is to decide which one haunts you, which one grabs you, which one holds you, and how can you learn to thrive more? It's never a question of, have I thrived as much as I can? There's always more to thrive. But have you decided to climb above and say, I'm going to thrive in spite of this? And begin to ask the questions, what do I have to learn from this, and what must I release from this? Releasing the pain, learning the lessons. That's how we learn to thrive. Okay, I hope that this was helpful for you. I would love to hear back on your thoughts. I would love to hear what you think about that. Just send me an email, podcast@thriveology.com. That's podcast@thriveology.com. If you have some ideas of what you'd like to hear about, I would love to hear from you. And it would be great if you would go to the iTunes store and just leave us a review and let people know what you got out of this. And that's one way of letting more people know about this. Or if you want to do a little tweet for us, that would be great. Show us a little Twitter love. It's easy to do. Just type in your browser, thriveology.com/love. That's thriveology.com, thriveology.com/love. And it's going to put a pre-populated tweet in your feed. All you have to do is hit send, or you can add something to it, but it'll give people a link to find us. And that's a great way of spreading the word and letting people there know that there is another model out there for what happens and how we can resolve ourselves. I wish you the best for a thriving week. This is Lee Balcom saying thrive on.
You've been listening to the Thriveology Podcast. Thank you for listening. If you want more information, visit us at Thriveology.com or at ThriveologyMagazine.com. Remember that Thriveology is spelled Thriveology. It's your life. Time to live it. Thank you.